Okay, it's 4:30, so we will call our meeting to order and welcome everyone. Our first item of business is the approval of the agenda for March 25th, 2026. We do have one item we'd like to add under 10. It will be 10A. We're going to make that correspondence, and it's from our MLA, Nolan Young, reclosure of Ross Thompson House and Store Museum and Barrington Woolen Mill Museum. So if I can have a motion, please, to accept the or approve the agenda as amended.
I'll move it.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next item is the acceptance of the minutes of March 11th, 2026. Are there any changes required to these minutes? If not, we will accept the minutes as presented. Next is business arising from the minutes. Anything to be discussed this evening from business arising? Hearing none, we'll move on to proclamation. And that's 5A, Purple Day, March 26, 2026. Whereas Purple Day is celebrated on March 26 annually during Epilepsy Awareness Month to increase the knowledge and understanding of epilepsy in the community. And whereas Purple Day was founded in 2008 by Cassidy Megan, a 9-year-old girl from Nova Scotia who wanted people living with epilepsy to know that they were not alone. And whereas on Purple Day, people in communities around the world are encouraged to wear purple in house events in support of epilepsy awareness. And whereas increasing epilepsy awareness can help the public to recognize common seizure types or to respond with appropriate first aid. And whereas Purple Day can improve the quality of life of people living with epilepsy, create a society that embraces the beauty of difference, and help us understand how we can all come together to make the world a better place. Therefore, be it resolved that I, Penny Smith, warden for the municipality of the District of Shelburne, do hereby proclaim March 26, 2026, as Purple Day in the municipality of Shelburne. All right, we will now move in camera. If I can have a motion, please, to go in camera at 4:32.
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Need a motion to go out of in camera.
I so move.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. And there's a prepared motion if you'd like to make that, Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Please. Thank you. Be it resolved that the District of the Municipality of Shelburne approve the grant application from Schoolhouse Rock for the establishment of 8 affordable housing units and to instruct the CAO to negotiate and enter into a contribution agreement funding the project through the HAF2 funding, HAF2 being the Housing Accelerator Fund number 2.
Great, thank you. Is there a seconder, please?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, and we are going to take just a 5-minute recess and reconvene at 5:57. Okay, it is now 6 o'clock, and I need a motion, please, to enter into public hearing.
Move it.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. So first, I would like to welcome everyone to this public hearing portion of our meeting. This public hearing is being held in relation to the adoption of the Municipality of Shelburne's subdivision bylaw. On behalf of Council, I thank you for your interest and participation in this important step in the planning process for our municipality. This public hearing has been advertised and convened in accordance with the requirements of the Municipal Government Act and all statutory obligations related to public participation, notice, and process have been fulfilled. The purpose of this public hearing is to provide an opportunity for the public to offer input on the proposed subdivision bylaw prior to council's final consideration of its adoption. To ensure a respectful and efficient process, the following rules of conduct apply. All individuals wishing to speak should sign up at the entrance. If you haven't and you wish to speak, please sign up now. I'll use that list to call the speakers up to the podium. And of course, if there are any online who wish to speak, we will check in as well with you. Each speaker will be permitted to address council once for a maximum of 15 minutes. Speakers are asked to state their name and civic address before beginning their remarks. This is a public hearing, not a question and answer session. While council will listen to all public comments and submissions, there will be no discussion or dialogue between council members and members of the public during this session, unless there is a need for clarification. Comments will be received respectfully. Disruptions or disrespectful conduct will not be permitted. And written submissions were permitted until today at noon, and I don't believe any were received. I'm just confirming that. Yes, thank you. Please be advised that council is here tonight to listen and receive input. Any new information, perspectives, or concerns brought forward this evening will be taken under advisement. Should new issues or information arise that require further deliberation, council will have the opportunity to discuss those matters during the regular council session following this public hearing. At that time, council may also engage with the project consultant or staff to seek clarification or further analysis. However, council will not engage in debate with the public during the council session. Once all speakers have had the opportunity to present, the public hearing will be closed. Council will then reconvene in regular session to consider final adoption of the document. And first, we will ask Brighter Planning to give a brief overview of the subdivision bylaw, and then we will invite speakers to make their comments. Okay, let's see who's with us this evening for Brighter Planning. Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, welcome.
Perfect.
And the floor is yours.
Can everyone see that okay?
Okay, we can see it.
Share, perfect. So good evening. I apologize to those of you that have heard this summary a couple of times. And for anyone that's here for the first time, we are Brighter Community Planning. We have been working with the municipality of the District of Shelburne for quite some time on getting some comprehensive planning documents and other work completed. So last year, the municipality adopted the first set of comprehensive planning documents, including the Municipal Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw. The subdivision bylaw as presented this evening is the final planning document of the kind of three pieces of comprehensive planning documents. And together with the municipal planning strategy and the land use bylaw, those three documents work together to guide development. So the Municipal Government Act is what enables the municipality to adopt the bylaw to control the development of land. And the three documents together form the planning framework for the municipality. In terms of the hierarchy or the way the documents work together, the MPS is the plan, the overarching policy that details council's intent for future growth, development, and environmental protection. The land use bylaw presents the zoning rules. So it implements the planning strategy by dividing the municipality into zones and setting regulations for things like setbacks, building heights, and permitted uses. Then the subdivision bylaw is really the division rule. So it sets the standards for how land is divided into new lots, consolidated, or for adjusting property boundaries. So why is a subdivision bylaw needed? It's required to ensure consistency and compliance with the land use bylaw and the municipal planning strategy. And there is a policy in the municipal planning strategy that actually requires the adoption of the subdivision bylaw. So the standard sort of provincial subdivision bylaw does provide some framework, but what it doesn't do without having your specific local document is it doesn't address the local context, and it also doesn't, because it predates the other documents, it doesn't fully reflect things like the updated zoning categories, revised minimum lot area and frontage requirements, private road provisions, provisions for new public roads or infrastructure, environmental overlay considerations, and the updated administrative and procedural requirements of the MGA. So to ensure consistency between the planning documents and the proper administration of development applications, a new subdivision bylaw is required. And some of the core pieces that are included in the subdivision bylaw that's before council this evening, it's important to note that the Municipal Government Act details what must be included in a subdivision bylaw. So this has been prepared to address the requirements of the Municipal Government Act. So the bylaw will ensure that newly created lots comply with the minimum lot area, frontage, and servicing requirements of the applicable zone under the land use bylaw. So it helps implement that. It provides clear technical standards for streets, access, services, and lot layout. So it clarifies requirements for lots fronting on private roads, as well as providing specifications for new public roads or other services. And it also requires bonding to ensure completion of any new public infrastructure. It requires an open space dedication, and in this case will be cash in lieu. And it also updates the administrative and procedural requirements for submission, including digital submissions, to allow for just better mapping of what is taking place in the real world. So the key policy directions, you know, we kind of went through those. Open space dedication. So this is required as part of the MGA. And there is the option to accept land or cash in lieu. And in conversations with staff, the decision was made to offer the cash in lieu option only. For those of you who were here for the other presentations, sometimes, you know, especially for large rural municipalities, having pieces of land that are far away from each other and not connected to your open space plan can be challenging to maintain. So the cash in lieu allows for money to be collected rather than taking a land dedication, and it can only be used for the purposes of open space, recreation, trails, those kinds of things. So it allows the municipality to fund maintenance and expansion of facilities in places that make the most sense for staffing and for public use. As far as roads and services go, this is another area where it is sort of localized in a certain sense that where there are no specific municipal standards now, It references out to published and accepted engineering standards for with construction standards. So for private roads, it's really just ensuring that anyone who is purchasing newly subdivided on a private road has a road that is safe and maintainable and built to a certain standard. And then for the new public roads, there are more comprehensive standards and references, and for public infrastructure as well. And it allows the municipality the opportunity to adopt municipal specific standards at a later date, but at this point refers out to published and established engineering standards. And in terms of the administration, it provides clear procedures for tentative and final approvals. There is also a new concept plan kind of step on the subdivision process for anything that would require a new, or anything that would construct a new public road or public infrastructure, so that provides an additional early opportunity for any project that might be looking at those new pieces of public infrastructure. It does include and reinforce that any new public roads or any new public roads would have to be specifically approved in concept by council, so that the load, I guess, of what is built and then going to be vested to the municipality is pre-approved. So there's a standard for that as well. In terms of the timeline, this project has been going since the fall, with multiple opportunities for engagement. And here we are at the end with the presentation for the public hearing and second reading. And then the project is anticipated based on tonight's progress to wrap up by the end of this month. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Jennifer, for your overview. Are there any questions or comments from council? Hearing none.
Oh, I have one.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Thank you. So as it relates, Jennifer, to what you said about open space, you said in this case, cash and loose. So I was unsure as to what you were referring to when you said in this case, like in this bylaw.
Yes, in the bylaw specifically for the municipality, the District of Shelburne, different municipal units deal with that in different ways. But what we are seeing with some of the other rural municipalities, traditionally it would have been a piece of land that was dedicated to the municipality for each subdivision over a certain number of lots. So I know I live in West Hants, and they're in the process of trying to divest from these like scattered small parcels that they don't have the capacity to maintain or do anything with. So it's something that traditionally was done as a dedication. And then there's also quite an administrative burden to ensure that the land you're receiving is suitable for purpose. It does say in the MGA it has to be suitable, but someone's got to go, you know, kind of tramp around, look at it, and that kind of thing. And so in this case, rather, especially with the deeply rural areas, rather than having parcels that you can't do anything with, the cash in lieu allows the funding to be directed toward your open space and recreation plans. So it just allows for a more maintainable and connected recreation and open space plan. You can expand something that's already existing, or add something in an area where you're hearing from the public they would really like a certain resource in a certain place, versus having these parcels. And it's often a benefit to whoever's subdividing the land as well, because rather than lose a portion of the land, they can maximize their use of the land for sale as well.
Sure, of the potential building space. So that makes perfect sense in terms of fragmentation, costs, all of that. How are we left with ensuring sufficient space so that the space is pleasing and it's not just for this generation of people that will buy and invest in the community, but, you know, decades from now? So how do we strike that balance? That's a question that still is in my mind, given the pearls that you've and experience that you've described. And then secondly, we're probably talking about significant amounts of money in terms of the 5%. Potentially, I suppose, that would then be allocated. Like, I mean, I know it's variable, but that 5%. And so this is more, maybe more a staff question as well. So let's say you've got $1 million piece. So we could deduce what that 5% could be. In municipal units, do they park that on its own ledger line? So it's always there to track, to invest when we need to in an open space that might not be part of your jurisdiction?
Yes, I can't answer to how it's tracked sort of internally there. That would be a staff question, but it is under the MGA, it is required to be used for, and there's kind of a list of things that are related to recreation, open space, green space. So you can't take it and, upgrade a sewage lift station or something like that with it. So it is required, and how that's tracked internally would be kind of up to the finance folks, but it is required to be spent on things in that realm of open space.
Sure, just to close. So we know we need housing. This is critical. So it's really exciting that these things are coming down the pipe for us now. And ultimately also ensuring that, you know, we've got pleasing spaces out there for people to live in is also important. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. CAO, did you wish to speak?
No, I was just going to answer Councilor Thorburn Irvine's question there. We would put that 5% into a sub-reserve account purposes for recreation at a future date.
Okay, thank you for that. Deputy Warden?
I just have one question. You had stated about the new roads going in would meet the standards. What happens with our older roads that are already there? And if expansion happens, do they have to upgrade those roads going in?
I truly don't know. So if a road was being extended due to subdivision, that extension piece would have to meet the standards, but I can't say that I know what would happen to the existing piece. There wouldn't be necessarily the trigger in the subdivision bylaw, but I don't know.
And it's just because we have quite a few roads that's already established, there is room for expansion. So what happens?
And I would think, like, with a significant development, you know, there's a desire on the behalf of the person developing to, you know, work with the municipality on things. If it's a small subdivision of a few lots, then there's kind of that question of additional burden there as well. But
thanks, Jen.
Okay, thank you. CAO?
Yeah, I don't think we have the language in there right now to cover what you're asking. We would have to add that in to the bylaw if you wanted to do that. But then we'd have to presumably go back to first reading once we've added that language in. So it's your call.
Thank you for that. Excellent questions. Any other questions or comments for Jennifer? If not, again, Jennifer, thank you so much. We appreciate all the work that you've put into this for us. We're now going to move into public comments. And as mentioned earlier, written submissions were permitted until today at noon and none were received. And I don't see any speakers here for the sign-up sheet, but I will check online to see if there's anyone who wishes to speak to this matter. Hearing none, again, you know, whether you were here to speak or just to learn more or to just listen, we do appreciate your attendance and your contribution to this process. We are going to now need a motion to exit the public hearing and return to regular session. If someone would make that, please.
I would move it.
Thank you. Is there a seconder? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Moving on to operations and protective services. The first item is second and final reading of the subdivision bylaw, and that's Ms. Dion who's going to speak to that. Welcome. Or maybe the CAO is.
Yeah, Counselor, thank you. I'm doing it on behalf of Marcia.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now that we've exited the public hearing and there have been no requests for any substantial changes to the bylaw, the purpose of the staff report is to seek council's approval to proceed with the second reading of the new subdivision bylaw. And we have a prepared motion for you to read and vote on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Would someone like to make that motion?
I will.
Counselor Cool.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne gives second and final reading to the proposed subdivision bylaw for the Municipality of the District of Shelburne.
Thank you. Is there a seconder? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on this motion? Deputy Warden.
I just have concern over the road that I have brought up with a lot being roads in our municipality already that has room for expansion. I don't know if we can amend it later on, but it was brought to me by one of the residents, a road in my district, that if there was an expansion, what would happen?
CAO.
Thank you, Warden. Deputy Warden, you can request staff right now to go back and do amendments to the draft bylaw. And I believe I'll have to double check with the deputy, but I believe we'll have to go back to first reading and then and go through the process again, or you can delay it and do it at a future date, whichever you please.
Okay. Was there any further information that you needed on that, Deputy Warden, at this time? Okay. Councillor Shand.
Did you mean the wear and tear on what's there and building on it, and that the expectation is that they would have to bring the old road up to new road standard? That's the
Councillor Richardson.
I think rightfully so to be concerned, that I suspect a lot of those roads wouldn't measure up, whether it be allowances and culverts and so on for drainage, and it would be very pricey and difficult to upgrade them, especially if it was put back on the ones that were alongside of them. So it is something that is
I think to the Deputy Warden's point, I think it's and for the resident to bring that to your attention too, I think it's something that is obviously being perhaps considered. But and I'll look to staff for this, whether or not, you know, if this is something that we should pass now and look at perhaps revisiting in the near future, or whether or not we should deal with it this evening.
It really doesn't matter. Like, we'll have to put the same time and effort into it, whether we do it now or later. You'll have to go back to first reading. And start again. Yeah. So it really comes down to, hold on a second.
Yeah, he has. If there may be other, you know, once the subdivision bylaw has been in place for 6 months or something like that, there may be other items that come up that we haven't thought of.
I think the deputy wants to correct
me. I was just going to make that point, that there may be some other things that pop up over the next few months as we start to implement it.
Yeah.
That we could make a number of amendments at the same time and kind of tackle it all at once. Mm-hmm. And this way, if you pass tonight, if it's an addition and not necessarily something that you are, you have major concerns about needing to be changed, that you at least get the subdivision bylaw on the books and it's operational sooner.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's where my mind was going with it, that a lot of times we put our best foot forward, you know, with these bylaws and try to cover everything that we can. And then it gets passed and then it's, oh my heavens, you know, this has come up and we need to revisit it. So there could be other items that we would have to consider moving forward. But Deputy Warden, did you wish to speak again? CAO?
If you could just give me instructions as to whether or not you want us to put that language together for a future adjustment to the bylaw at a future date, then we can go ahead and do that.
And I'm good with that, that it's recognized and that we need to have that in the bylaw, that it needs the wording at a future date. And I'm good with that.
Great. Thank you for that. So there is a motion. It has been moved and seconded. Yes, Ms. Dion.
Excuse me. Sorry, I just had my hand up for a while, but just you guys didn't realize.
I can't see it.
That's no problem. I just wanted to chime in on that and just get a little bit of feedback from council, because I want to make sure I understood correctly what Deputy Warden was saying that she'd like to see in the bylaw. So what I heard was that you'd like some sort of clarification around whether existing roads can remain as is and any extensions to existing roads have to meet the current criteria, or whether or not all roads within the subdivision have to be upgraded to meet the current criteria. So I guess I just wanted to get some clarity on that, so I knew in the future what you'd like to see investigated and what you'd like to see for wording.
Okay, thank you for that, Deputy Warden.
So no, Marcia, it's what you had said first, that the existing roads, but the extension, if they decide to extend within that existing road to further development. Good.
Does that clarify it for you?
Yep, that's great. Thanks.
You're good? Okay, thank you for that. Okay, any further questions or comments to the motion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that. Moving on to RMRF disposal policy amendment, and that's Ms. Smith. Welcome.
Good evening.
Hi.
My voice, a little bit bug. So with all of the changes coming with the C&D site, we are proposing an amendment to the disposal policy. First, I want to bring attention to there is an actual error in my staff report. Under the date from March 1st to November 30th, it says Wednesday through Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and that should be 9:30 to 4.
Okay, thank you for that.
I'm sure everybody's had a chance to read over it. Uh-huh. I'll just highlight the things that we are about to change. And that is that the regular hours for April through to November will be Wednesday through Saturday, 9:30 to 4. And December 1st through to March 31st being 9:30 to 4, but it'd be Friday and Saturday. we looked through all of the data that we had from the C&D site using the software to see how many visits there were in that time frame, and that's what we came up with to be the best solution. Mm-hmm. For I guess production productivity. Mm-hmm. And staffing hours, I guess. What was the other? I think the biggest change to the disposal is that we're going to be doing mixed waste. Yes. So no longer separation of products, except for those things that are required by law to be separated, which that will not change. But everything, pardon me, in the C&D construction and demolition will be in a mixed waste disposal. Are there any questions?
Okay, thank you for that. There is a prepared motion if someone would like to make that. Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Okay, so the prepared motion. 8B, be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve the amended RMRF disposal policy as presented, effective April 1st, 2026.
Yes. Thank you. Is there a seconder?
A seconder.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on this motion?
That's why I put my light on.
Okay, Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
So this is great. It's our path forward and we're finalizing it. How will we roll this out to the communities? What will we look for, a social media post, and then maybe I can put it up on my own Facebook, councillor Facebook page?
For the
hours and hours, yeah, and so just so there's, you know, that so, people know that, you know.
So for now,
yeah.
Starts tomorrow. That it will be on the radio.
Okay.
About the closure, and then as it comes closer, because it will be closed from April 1st until the 15th.
Okay.
I want to say renovations, but that's not correct. Yeah. But upgrades.
Yeah.
Get everything prepared for the new model,
mm-hmm.
and that will be announced on the radio. I already have it on our social media page now, and I believe it's been shared on the municipal page. So feel free to share that.
Okay.
And it's being on the radio, and then it's rolling out closer to the 15th will be when it's open, and it's announcing the hours of operation.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor Cool.
I have a question, and then what that will make, how that is answered, will probably deal with the second part of it. It really involves removal of materials on 48.6, and prior to this, there was that we had made, because of safety reasons and things, back that there would be no scavenging or picking is not permitted at the site. But I noticed there's a change here, and is there going to be more than one employee working at the site at that time? Or just one, or is it going to still be two working those hours? I don't know if I can ask.
Then I'll jump in. It'll be the same as right now, except the amount of days that it's open is
going to change. Yeah, and I understand.
So we have two employees. It'll be the odd time where we just have one, if one of the others is on holiday.
Yeah.
But that person will be checked in and supervised by Danielle or Marcia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know where we had talked about it before with the safety of things, when things start moving, we were a little concerned, because if some people are starting to jump into those containers or whatever, they will.
I'm sorry, counselor. You're saying 48.6?
Like, I think it's 48.6, yeah. It's a scavenging and picking of removal of material from the facility is prohibited, except when authorized and organized by the municipality. In other words, back to the old.
Actually, I know. The reason that was put in there is there are times when rope that artisans and stuff wanted to use, and they were prohibited to go in and do anything with that. So if it was something that was monitored, it wouldn't be scavenging for like metal or wood, or that's mixed and they're in bins. There's no scavenging in those bins whatsoever. And it was, you know, something that would be organized by us to have like a day if artisans wanted to go in and collect something for good projects.
That's fine. Okay. I just wanted to double check.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Okay, and excuse me, Ms. Dion, did you want to make a comment on that as well?
No, that's okay. Danielle covered it.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Richardson?
Yeah, I was reading between the lines. I know there's an effort out by Sustain to deal with rope. It looks encouraging, and hopefully it's successful and it's in the midst of trials. And also, I think it's along with Ocean Shores has been spearheading some of that. But I will say I was happened to be on site today, and I did see some of the new containers. I assume that we're setting or on site to one side. Of course, they're not set up or anything, but they certainly look fine. And I drove in to drop off some lobster traps, and of course, the place is completely empty. So it's in preparation for the above. So it's beginning to look good.
Thank you for that.
And it will be part of the sustain program.
Thank you, Deputy Warden.
Oh, no, I'm done.
Good. Yeah, I think this is a very good policy, one that we needed, of course, with the changes that are coming into effect. And I'm glad to hear of all of the social media and other ways that you're ensuring that our residents are aware of what's taking place, because that's very important. So thank you for that. Deputy Warden?
I will ask one question. Has there been any comments from the public at this point, like calls coming in or anything like that to the office?
In reference to
the change of hours and the change of, you know, basically what's going on there with the mixed.
Initially, I think it was a shock, you know, to some, mainly contractors, because of the space. But I think they managed to look at it in a way that it's open, and they just have to arrange their drop-offs a little differently.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you for that. Oh, Ms. Dionne?
So I just wanted to add, We did have some initial feedback from the public, and we've been very sort of we've had a lot of intentional posts telling the public that mixed does not mean we accept mixed waste. Mixed means that we accept mixed construction and demolition waste only. So there was a misconception in the immediate after the announcement that perhaps we were accepting household garbage. So we just try to be very clear and give clear messaging to everyone who reaches out and everyone who posts on our various advertisements to let them know mixed means mixed construction and demolition waste only. So I just wanted to put that out there in case anyone's listening in, so that they realize that when we use the word mixed, it didn't change the type of materials our site accepts. It still only accepts construction and demolition transfer waste.
Great. Thank you for that. That's important for everyone to know. Thank you. Okay, we do have a motion. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that. Moving on to economic and community development. First item is the Shelburne Events Committee appointment, and that's another Ms. Smith. Welcome.
All right. A couple of weeks ago, you guys approved a updated terms of reference for the Shelburne Events Committee, which would provide for us to have a minimum of 4 and a maximum of 12 community members, and up to 2 council members from both the municipality and the town. So we put a call out in early March, and we received just 2 applications of people, but we wanted to get them put through right now. We still have room for some more people if anyone's interested. And at this time, the town of Shelburne didn't want to appoint another council member. So we have 2 people that were interested, Carol Ann Bauer here from the municipality, representing though as a community member who's very involved in the activities up at the Middle and Upper Ohio Hall. And the other person being Sue Acker, who works down at Shelburne Physiotherapy, has always been involved in many things when her kids were younger in school, and now has a lot more time to give. So those are our 2 committee appointments that we're looking to have approved. And the committee's also recommending that council appoint a 2nd member of council to serve on the committee.
Okay, well, with the 2nd part, we are just in the midst of looking at all of our boards and committees, so perhaps that one we can wait on. I'm looking to the deputy CAO for that. Because ours would be done, what, probably next month? Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess just in that situation, then Angie was serving as a community member on the committee. So that's just where we're, I guess, if she can continue to serve as a community member until then.
Okay.
Is that, yeah?
Does that sound good for everyone until we go through our list of boards and committees and do our formal motion?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would someone like to make the motion, please? Deputy Warden?
I'll make the motion. Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne appoint Sue Acker and Carol Ann Bauer as community members of the Shelburne Events Committee. Are we waiting on that?
We're going to have Councillor Shand continue or in that capacity, or do you want?
Yeah, well, I had it in here as a recommended motion to appoint someone, but if you'd like to wait, then that's up to you guys.
It's the same person.
Well, I mean, that may change is the thing, though. Once we, when we all send in our requests to the deputy CAO. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. So that is the motion. Can I have a seconder, please? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion?
So,
Deputy Warden?
So we are in agreement to leave Councillor Shand in the community position until the boards and committees
at this point. That's right.
Yeah.
All good. Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next item is tax exemptions for community organizations policy amendment.
So we approved a updated policy a while ago that Val had gone through and done. But with this, it's an updated Schedule A. So last year, I started really going through all of the groups that were on this list and to really see that the requirements that we were asking for, that they were all there and for them to remain in good standing. So through internal review of these, we found three organizations that need to be removed or changed. So the first one, assessment account number 01855646. It was previously the Northeast Harbor Community Hall, and it's now been transferred into the Harbor Fire Department. So, Paul, I think that's in your district. So, so that's just a name change of that one. The 01354477, which is in Dale's district, which was the name of it before. Because I've taken it off now. Sable River, was it called?
East
Sable River, yeah. No registered owners, therefore it's ineligible. It needs to be removed, and I think you'll probably see that come back, just kind of like that Busy Bees.
Okay.
Yeah, so it probably will come up. But I was in conversation with Cindy and Sherm Embry, who were the people we were mailing the things to, and no connection, like there's nothing. So that one,
as far as we know, in talking to Sherm and Cindy, given their age and so on, they have been the ones that have been keeping it up, but surrounding property owners, nobody has voiced interest into taking it, so it's just going in limbo.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, mm-hmm. So it's a hall? Is that what's
it
there?
It used to be an old schoolhouse, small, a small community schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it had been taken over and they called it a community hall.
Yeah, but I don't think it's had any use.
Okay.
Like hasn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for that.
So that one. And then the assessment account number 03401669, that is the Birchtown Community Center. And that just needs to have the word association added on the end of the organization name. So when I went through all these, I really checked with Registry of Joint Stocks to PVSE, like everything matches now of, you know, so excellent. Some of these organizations discovered some things upon us doing this. The Jordan Bay Hall, for example, they had been doing everything as Jordan Bay something, something association, and they're really the Jordan Bay Community Club, and they didn't realize that. So those are the revised items on Schedule A.
Okay, so I just have a question before we mean motion, if I may.
Yep.
So District 3 and District 5 both have, are they the same assessment account numbers? We have the Jordan Bay Community Club in both of those.
Yeah, that is my mistake. I didn't take that one out of.
Okay.
Yeah. So
because of the boundary change?
Yes. Yeah. And that was the other, oh, sorry, I didn't include that at the bottom. We've also moved the Jordan Bay Community Club into the District 5 category, but I just did not take it out of under the 3. So we'll make that change before we publish it.
Okay. And the Nova Scotia Number Limited one, what is?
That is, it's part of Sandy Point Recreation Group, I believe. Yeah, there's a piece of land right beside it, I believe.
Got sold.
Pardon?
There was a piece of land, because I went to that meeting.
Yeah.
So there was this postage stamp piece of land, and it was the Fay family.
Yeah.
So the Fay family sold it. So probably you're correct in that it is the Sandy Point. So I didn't mean to alarm
you. Yeah, and I just think it's just not under the same association of the recreation group. It just
like migrated or something.
Yeah, maybe eventually they'll put them all together, but for now that's.
But it is
It's a piece of land. It's not a hall or anything like that.
That's right. Adjacent. Yeah. Distal to the town. So the rec center is here, and then there's this little piece of land that they wanted to make sure that nobody bought and developed it or did anything there. Mm-hmm. So the recreation people bought it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I do have a question. Penny, are you done?
Yeah.
So why is there, why is this, I see there's a repetition in some of the other districts, but why is Sandy Point Recreation Group listed times 4?
It's just, I think, because those assessment accounts, they just have, that's just how they're set up, that they have those 4 different assessment account numbers. So they would get 4 separate tax bills. Yeah. Like through PVSC, I guess.
It's, yeah. It's like you having 2 separate pieces of property with different account numbers.
Yeah. Right?
That's what they have, but they're all for that group.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, if we'd like to make a motion, or there is a motion prepared, and I would just suggest that we add as amended, because there will be removal of the Jordan Bay Community Club of District 3's
group. In 3, that's my question.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, did you want to make that motion, Councillor Poole?
Yep.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of District Shelburne approve the attached Schedule A of the tax exemptions for community organization policy as amended.
Thank you. Is there a seconder? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that. Moving on to what is now 10A, and that is correspondence that we received. I think it was yesterday from our MLA.
Yeah,
2 days ago on March 23rd. And so you'll remember that council had approved us sending a letter to our premier regarding the Ross Thompson House and Store Museum, or Museum and Store, and the Barrington Woolen Mill. And so this is the letter, of course, that we sent. And then we received a response from Mr. Young. We're still waiting on a response from Premier Houston, whom we actually addressed the letter to. So hopefully that will be forthcoming as well. Are there any questions or comments regarding the email?
I have a comment.
Certainly.
I think her letter was very well not drafted, but put together and sent. And I thought I saw something on social media that said that they were passing the budget this afternoon at 1.
Yeah, I believe the budget may have passed.
And it did pass, yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah. It really is unfortunate that the prioritization of the broad swath of community. And so I think we've expressed our concerns on behalf of the public.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
thank you. Any other questions or comments on this? Hearing none, we're going to move into now 11, committee reports and warden update. Are there any committee reports for this evening?
I do have one.
Yes, please.
Okay, so it's the Western County Regional Library. We had our quarterly meeting, our board meeting, on the 19th, this past Thursday. And so the reality is, and it has been this since I started in 2020 as counselor, is that retroactively the province has given what is referred to as bridge funding. So it wasn't funding going forward, but it was funding catching up to a previous allocation of provincial funds. And so we've had two rounds of bridge funding, but again, this doesn't push us into the future. It basically catches us up from inadequate funding. And so there's just two concepts that I would like to leave everyone with, and that is stable funding. And so out of this budget, with all of its alarm, we did have Executive Director Stephanie Smith from CCTH, the library, from probably Heritage, it might come down through Heritage, immediately email us to say the stable funding was in place. So I think there's such a value in libraries, and we can all relate to it. It's not just about literacy. It's a cornerstone of community connection, and the province has used it in a number of avenues. It's an accessible space, certainly for government, and it's also a safe space for community. So while we have stable funding, what we do not have is sustainable funding. And we have an excellent executive director there's a real nuance to, navigating nearly a $2 million budget over the Tri-County, and ensuring that we maintain a good relationship with the government, the provincial government as a funder. And so I'll just touch on the fact that the provincial funding is 71%. It's 26% coming from municipal units. So we are important funders. And staff is by the MGA, is mandated to do 3% of funding. And so they do that through book sales and that kind of thing. Thank you, Warden, for your communication through to the ward, to the CAO, as it relates to what value do we get. And so if I can just briefly touch on our executive director did correspond to Warren. And so of the $447,800 that all 11 municipal units contribute, our contribution, let me just see here, is $34,100. And we have two full-time staffers at the McKay Memorial Library at a cost of $86,000. So I think we do give good value. We get good value for our contribution. And I did reach out to Town Councilor Elizabeth Acker because it came up at the board meeting. And what she really wanted to also zone in on is that in that nearly $2 million budget, there is no, there's nothing in there for the funding of buildings. So when it pertains to the town of Shelburne, the Western Regional County Library budget does not fund the operational requirements of that building. And I'm not Elizabeth Acker, I'm not a town councilor, but she did make the point at our board meeting that the costs of the McKay Library are borne by the building association, and that is within the town. And she does make the point that our municipal residents also advantage the library service. And so I don't believe that the municipality funds any of that. And I know she'd want the councilors at this table to understand that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Okay.
And that will be discussed tomorrow at budget. Any other committee reports to bring forward? Councillor Richardson?
I had attended the Region 6 meeting.
Mm-hmm. I know there's always lots going on there with that group. So lots going on with waste management in general, I think. Yeah. Okay. So last week was a relatively quiet meeting week, with it being March break, of course, and a lot of people away. But on March 18th, the town of Shelburne did host the Shelburne County Leadership Meeting that morning. And there was an event held last Saturday in Halifax. The Canada Memory of the World Register will add the Black Loyalists in Canada archival collection as part of its mission to recognize documentary heritage of national significance. That's really big. That is just a fabulous, fabulous thing. The collection Black Loyalists in Canada, Autonomy, Advocacy, Community, Legacy, documents the history of Black Loyalists who arrived in Nova Scotia from the United States in the 1780s and their descendants. So a huge congratulations to Andrea Davis, who is the Executive Director of the Black Loyalist Heritage Center, and everyone involved in making that happen. And next Tuesday afternoon at the Black Loyalist Heritage Center is the 20th Arson Remembrance event from 1 to 3 p.m. And I hope that you will be able to attend that event. Okay, it is now time to go back in camera at 6:56 p.m. If I can have a motion to that effect, please.
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried.